Thanks, Mason. What I'm going to talk about is actually part of a larger group, and you can see all the co-authors here. And in fact, Allison Eagle, who's the second author here, is going to give a presentation tomorrow, tomorrow morning sometime. So I'd encourage you to look at that. It has a more complete analysis, or built on this particular paper, so I think. Yeah. So, do I have a pointer? Or is it? Oh, okay, good. So just to emphasize why we're interested in managing soil carbon, from the IPCC report that came out in 2007, it was pretty clear in that particular report at a global level that agriculture plays an important role in mitigation, particularly on the point of soil carbon sequestration. And then there's all these other synergistic values. And in fact, on a global level, some around, depends on which numbers you use, but 10 to 18% of the emissions could be sequestered or recycled back in the soil. So it's a significant impact that, particularly that's immediately available. And so that, but that's at the global level. Now when you talk about managing for carbon at croplands on a local level, it becomes a little more challenging, and there's a lot more variation. So what I've tried to do in this particular presentation is kind of highlight some of the issues that have come up the last few years. So if we look at carbon cycling and soil carbon and the factors that affect that, I think I like to use this graph, and you've seen my talks, I've used it quite a bit. But I think it's important to think about this, why there are some variations in soil carbon and carbon inputs. And so the carbon inputs is primarily through the plant material, but then both the plant and the microbes here are controlled or driven by climatic factors, mainly temperature and precipitation, soils, soil mineralogy, soil texture, are also important. And but then what we're talking about here is management that will affect that balance of carbon that goes into the system as well as what that leaves out. As far as this TAG or technical ag group that Allison sitting up here and this, the co-authors were working on, what they've done is look over over 800 papers looking at carbon and nitrogen cycling and methane emissions from agriculture systems. So it's a pretty extensive lit review, and there's a report that's online that you can access, and you can contact one of us to look that up. I'm sure you can probably Google it. And I'm just going to give a short focus on the cropland aspect. And Allison's going to give a little more complete analysis presentation tomorrow. So if we look at the carbon aspects, just I picked out three practices that we, for the purpose of this paper presentation, looking at reduced tillage, no-till being the prime example. And what you see here is on average, we are seeing about 1.9. This is out of 470 papers, I think, were associated with the no-till aspects of reduced tillage. On average, and whatever that means, around one ton of CO2 equivalents per hectare per year, but it ranges from negative 0.26 to over 2.5. We've also included, and I'm not going to talk about in this presentation, some of the nitrous oxide and methane emissions associated with some of those practices, and then some upstream processes, but again, the net impact is about a little over a ton. Cover crops, on average, 0.83, and then diversifying annual crop rotations, about 0.58, but again, look at the range. It's quite extensive. And so what I kind of want to do is look at some of those driving factors and why there's some differences in those and help maybe explain some of the issues in the literature. Stephen Ogle, a few years ago, did a lit review looking at both reduced till and no-till, and you can see the range here of the negative values, I'll focus on the no-till. But then neutral to positive values, and there's quite a range here, but a majority of them show zero or a positive effect. There are some differences associated with climatic regions, and I'm going to highlight those a little bit better. So, Rodrigo Nicolosa, one of my graduate students, also working with Brazil, we got a more extensive lit review that we're getting ready to submit for publication. Probably, I forgot now, 60 or 70 articles that we've gone through. But I've highlighted some examples here looking at trying to separate out some of the climate soil type differences. And this is in response, the paired response to no-till relative to a tilled system, whatever that means. So if you look here, we have the latitude going from 46 degrees north. I believe, Denny, this might be somewhere where you went. Might be one of your sites. I can't remember now. Going through the North American continent, and actually we have a site, in this example, we have more, down in southern Brazil. So mean annual temp, mean annual precipitation, the drainage class, and then crop, it pretty much kind of stayed within a corn or soybean type system. Multiple years, more than 10 for the most part. In this part, we got much more variation in the extensive review. And then depth, we've included here, primarily going 60 centimeters in a few cases down to almost a meter. So this is the change in carbon relative to the tilled system. So if you look here, in the top part, we have negative values. So the no-till actually has less soil carbon than in the tilled system. And here we have I'm going to classify these as certainly a cool or cold system. Well-drained, soybean barley, is negative 0.2 tons per hectare, megagrams per hectare. Get a little bit warmer climate, but we have two here that slightly warmer, but poorly drained corn soybean rotations, again also negative. Okay, from about a 1 to 1.5 megagrams per hectare. In the same near latitude temperature, but well drained, then we can start to see some positive effects of reduced tillage and no-till in this particular example, about a 1 to 1.5 ton CO2 equivalent. Okay, remember these are these are in carbon megagrams of carbon per hectare, down to 60 centimeters. Sorry. So there seems to be a break here that with the cold and then the wet soil conditions, that the tillage response is neutral or negative, and then you get into better drain conditions, then the tillage response is a little more positive. So that kind of goes back up, and I don't know if I can back up, but that review that Stephen Ogle shows, I think some of those negative values are those what I would call extreme, but maybe the Canadians might not agree, but those cold, wet conditions. So I think we need to think about regionalizing or separating out some of these cropping systems. And I'm just using tillage as an example, but I think there's more. You can't just make blanket statements. You do this practice, you're going to get this. I think we need to think about those driving factors. And I'm not the first one to say that. So, and then I just included a couple other sites. Well-drained, a little bit warmer. About 0.6, Maysoon's been involved in this, megagrams per hectare. And then down in Brazil, again, much higher temperature, in more intensive rotation, about 0.4 response factor there. The other question that's come up is time. How long can some of these soils retain or continue to add carbon? And the answer is, I don't know. Okay. And I'm not, I could spend another half hour, but here's a site, one of my sites, in Kansas, where we've been going on for 20 years. And if you look at the top line here, this is 0 to 30 centimeters, going, actually goes back to 1990, and we're 2010 now. But in this particular case, no-till continuous corn with commercial fertilized urea, it's pretty much linear over that whole time period. So we haven't reached any sort of capacity or saturation or whatever term you want to limit, and it doesn't even appear to be bending over at all. So I don't know what the time factor is. We got some other data that may indicate some other opportunities. That's another story. But there is, we do have some analysis where we looked at what is the carbon holding capacity of a soil, and we've had practices looking at different N rates, different manure applications, or manure versus fertilizer. Of course, manure, you're putting in carbon into the system as well. And so what Rodrigo has done is to look at carbon associated with different aggregate sizes, because that's where the carbon is associated with both biophysical protection. And if the black line represents the largest aggregates, greater than 2,000 microns in size. The X's here, these points here, represent native tallgrass prairie in our region. And then these are the different cropping practices. And what you see here, basically this cluster here represents no-till with manure added. So arguably, and we're approaching and actually exceeding what the native prairie has shown here, both in the 2,000 micron size, and then even in the 250 to 2,000. See, this cluster here is higher than what the prairie has shown. So, in this, some of these high residue or high carbon input systems, we can maintain what the, or maybe attain what the native situation, in this case tallgrass prairie, was, and we got some indication that it actually might be higher than the native. But certainly that might be, that's one of the issues, is how much carbon can be held in these soils. And certainly in cropping systems well designed, they might equal or exceed what the native system was. And that's certainly in Brazil, under the low pH grasslands down in southern Brazil, we can definitely exceed in well-managed system improved soils, greatly exceed, in fact. One of the issues that we're working on in this review is the impact of rotational tillage. And so if we gain this carbon, if you have to go in and do some remediation work, fix some erosion or gullies, some other issues. If you do a one-time tillage, okay, one time, and then go back to a less disturbed, reduced till or no-till system, do you lose all that carbon? And again, one of my students here, I'm just using as illustrative. We have three sites, and in fact, if you look at pre-tillage soil carbon down to 30 centimeters, and then post-tillage, and we have different tillage systems, chisel disc, sweeps, we have four different type of disturbances. And in the Wallace site, we didn't lose carbon. In fact, we actually gained carbon a year later, and we got some explanation for that. The Tribune site, we lost a little bit of carbon, and another site, we didn't lose any. And this certainly agrees with some work out of Canada and Nebraska, also shown that one-time tillage, you don't lose carbon. Now, obviously, if you're going to go 20 years, we go back to the situation that we had before, we've lost half our carbon. But that carbon can be managed even in a one-time tillage event. Rotation effects, may soon, thanks. There are some rotation effects, there's some synergistic activities, and there's the point I want to make here is that this is with no-till, that we need to look some of these at a systematic approach, that no-till with a single crop monoculture or with rotational, diversifying that crop rotation, there actually might be some synergistic effects, and we can gain carbon by diversifying that rotation. Another sampling depth issue, or another sampling is sampling depth, and I know that's been a little bit of controversy. We've gone down to actually a meter and a half at some sites here, and in some cases we didn't see a reversal in our well-drained, warm, temperate climate soils. I think that's not what you might see in some of the more poorly drained, cooler climates that in the Northeast U.S. and Canada. And in fact, it was kind of interesting, we do see significant gains even down here at 60 centimeters or approximately so in the no-till systems, and we're exploring that. So we got some indication we're getting some carbon movement that's building up here and moving down and being deposited at the lower depth. So that's certainly, we need to measure down to 45, 60, 90 centimeters, but I think, I'll just leave it at that. So, to summarize, I think crop and soil management can provide an opportunity to increase soil carbon, but it's going to be dependent on the climate, soil, and the cropping system. We need to think a little bit more in depth in that system analysis. The time or potential of soils to store carbon, I think, is still unknown. At one time, moderate tillage does not reverse the gains in soil carbon from no-till, and I think there's some synergistic effects. And then we need to think about protocols, that what is the appropriate sampling depth, and I would not recommend one design sampling depth that's going to have to be designed upon the climate and the soil conditions. We aren't going to sample down to 60 centimeters in some of our native prairie soils if the soil is only 10, 15 centimeters depth. So I think we got to be flexible in the protocol. And with that, thank you. Right. Yeah, and part of this lit review, and I just had to show, I couldn't show all 60 studies that we've done through, but yeah, we've seen that. So there's a difference between East and West Canada. So I think it's climate, precipitation, but I think it's the drainage class. So I think it's the cool, wet certainly is an area that we need to be concerned about as far as a tillage. Now, maybe there's other things that we do for carbon management, but yeah, the drainage class, maybe ET needs to be a factor in there. So I agree. Okay, thanks.